Welcome to the debate. Today, we're digging into different perspectives on the federal news update for Wednesday, September 10th, 2025. I'm Regan Bush.
And I'm Carter Clinton. And yes, today's update, it really does cover quite a broad spectrum of administrative actions, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And that brings us to our core question today. Does the current administration's, let's call it dual-track strategy, this combination of an America First domestic agenda and a, well, recalibrated international posture, does it ultimately strengthen or does it undermine long-term U.S. interests and, indeed, global stability? Now, I'll be arguing that these actions represent a, frankly, necessary and decisive shift. It's about prioritizing American prosperity, American influence, correcting the missteps of the past, and really fortifying the nation for the challenges ahead.
Okay. And I'm going to contend that this approach, while yes, perhaps aiming for strength, is actually creating some pretty unsustainable internal contradictions. It seems to be alienating key allies, and it's introducing a level of instability that I believe ultimately harms the U.S. position both here at home and internationally.
Look, this administration is delivering on promises. It's focusing on direct benefits for Americans and streamlining what has become, let's be honest, a bloated government apparatus over many, many years. Take the Make America Healthy Again initiative. The presidential memorandum, it specifically targets misleading prescription drug ads, mandating full safety disclosures. Now, this is a powerful common sense move. It's about consumer protection, reversing years of, frankly, lax standards. As HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. put it, we need to shut down that pipeline of deception that's been distorting the doctor-patient relationship. It's fundamentally about transparency, empowering individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond healthcare, look at the OMB's proposal. They want to eliminate over 60 unnecessary and redundant accounting requirements for federal contractors. Now, this isn't just, you know, shuffling papers. It's about reducing burdens. It's about encouraging more talented companies from working with the government, fostering a truly dynamic industrial base right here. And for our federal retirees, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act offers tangible relief. We're talking temporary additional Social Security tax deductions, extended lower income tax rates, an increased SALT cap. It even sets up these Trump accounts for children, essentially, tax-advantaged savings plans to encourage long-term investment for the next generation. These actions, plus exploring things like a separate cyber force for national security, these are pragmatic, necessary steps to fortify our nation, making us stronger, more secure. It's that simple.
Well, you paint a very optimistic picture there, Regan. But when you really scrutinize these policies, I think the reality is far more concerning. I would argue that the administration's strategy, even if it aims for strength, is just riddled with policy inconsistencies and, frankly, damaging contradictions that are starting to unravel public trust and our standing in the world. Let's just start with what I see as a really profound philosophical tension, right, between deregulation and surveillance. So on one hand, OMB proposes contractor deregulation, raising the cost accounting standards threshold, supposedly to make things easier for businesses.
Right, cutting red tape.
Okay, but simultaneously, Treasury is finalizing a do not pay waiver. And what does that do? It expands internal surveillance capabilities. It eases data sharing restrictions between agencies. So what we're seeing is less oversight for corporations, but more intrusive government scrutiny for, you know, individuals getting federal payments. That's a disturbing duality, isn't it? Shifting accountability onto the little guy while loosening it for big contractors. Then there's public health, this Make America Healthy Again initiative. Okay, populist branding, sure. But it's being led by an HHS secretary whose skepticism about vaccines is widely criticized. His public comments linking gun violence to psychiatric drugs. I mean, that's not just unscientific, it actively undermines public trust in established medical science. And you see states like Florida banning school vaccine mandates, a move even many Republicans and health experts call a horrible idea, fearing, you know, the spread of preventable diseases. This isn't empowering parents. It's jeopardizing public health for what looks like political gain. And then internationally, this U.S. Republic of Korea crisis, the immigration raid at a Hyundai LG battery factory, detaining South Korean nationals, it threatens a massive, what, $350 billion investment. This directly undercuts the administration's own stated goal of onshoring critical supply chains with allied support. It projects, and I'm quoting here, profound unreliability to all foreign investors. Taken together, these actions, they're creating instability and distrust, not strength.
I see why you might frame it that way, but my perspective on that fiscal oversight is quite different. What you call a duality is actually, I think, a balanced and responsible approach to governing. Yes, we are cutting red tape for businesses, making federal contracting more accessible by raising that CAS threshold. Why? Because that fosters competition, it fosters efficiency, and that ultimately benefits the taxpayers. Simultaneously, we are clamping down hard on fraud and waste. Initiatives like Do Not Pay are designed to ensure taxpayer money isn't misused. That isn't contradictory. It's about creating an efficient and accountable government delivering value while protecting against abuse. It's two sides of the same coin. Now, regarding Make America Healthy Again, even with, let's say, a nuanced approach to vaccines, the core principle is empowering parents with information. It's ensuring transparency in healthcare. The administration is focused on radical transparency in an industry that has desperately lacked it for a long time, giving families the freedom to make informed choices. And on the federal workforce, look, the issues you cite, these are largely transitional challenges. They're legacy problems, Carter, problems that have festered for years under previous administrations. GSA, for example, is actively addressing a multi-billion-dollar maintenance backlog in federal buildings. They're reorganizing to be more agile, customer-focused, and consistently deliver high-quality service. And initiatives like the departure dialogues, that's a proactive effort to collect employee input to improve government. These are necessary reforms, not neglect. And let's not forget the One Big Beautiful Bill. Provides clear financial benefits for federal employees and retirees. That shows a tangible commitment to their economic well-being amidst these changes. This is about making government work better, period.
This is about making government work better, period. I'm sorry, but the contradiction there just seems absolutely glaring to me. You really can't credibly claim to be pro-business by reducing oversight for contractors while you're increasing intrusive surveillance on other federal payment recipients, waiving privacy protections under Do Not Pay. That is a fundamental ideological inconsistency. It shifts scrutiny away from corporations onto individuals. That's not balanced. It's redefining accountability in a way that disproportionately hits ordinary citizens. And on public health, the idea that dismissing scientific consensus on vaccines or linking gun violence to psychiatric drugs like the HHS secretary has done is somehow just empowering parents, that's a dangerous fallacy. It directly undercuts scientific credibility. It erodes public trust. It substitutes evidence-based policy with, well, political ideology.
Floria's anti-vaccine stance, despite alarm bells ringing even within the Republican Party about disease spread, that highlights a truly dangerous prioritization of, let's call it, political science over actual epidemiology. It's not nuanced, it's reckless. And furthermore, these persistent issues across federal agencies, you know, the increased retirement claim processing times, the retaliation claims within FEMA against employees who spoke out, DHS's 20-year failure to modernize its HR IT systems, this suggests systemic neglect, maybe even an active undermining of the federal workforce. Employees facing mold, pests, and broken elevators returning to offices. Thousands of probationary employees fired, and an appeals court just dismisses the state's challenges. This isn't just transitional. It feels like deliberate destabilization, fostering a hostile environment for public servants and weakening the government's ability to deliver basic services.
But you're portraying these workforce issues as if they're new or deliberately created right now. I frame them as persistent, systemic problems that, yes, predate this administration, but are now finally being tackled head-on. That multi-billion-dollar maintenance backlog you mentioned, it festered for decades under previous leadership. This administration, through GSA's reorganization, is making concrete efforts, making government more agile, customer-focused, and consistently deliver high-quality service for the American taxpayer. These aren't symptoms of neglect. They are tough, necessary reforms. The departure dialogues, far from being some negative sign, are a proactive effort. They show a commitment to collecting institutional knowledge, getting employee input to improve government. And again, let's not just brush past the substantial financial benefits in the One Big Beautiful Bill. Real relief for federal employees and retirees. That shows a tangible commitment during these changes. This is about real solutions to long-standing problems, not just, you know, pointing fingers at the past. It's about building a federal government that actually works for the people, not one trapped in its own inefficiency.
Okay, I appreciate the argument that some of these are legacy issues, but streamlining government shouldn't come at the cost of basic functionality or, maybe even more importantly, employee trust. The Departures Dialogue Program, framing it as proactive, it seems much more like a direct response to a massive outflow of federal talent, a recognition of systemic failures, not some forward-thinking initiative dreamt up in a vacuum. The very fact that thousands of probationary employees were fired and an appeals court just waved away the state's challenge, well, that reflects an attitude towards the federal workforce that feels anything but supportive. It signals, I think, a profound distrust of government institutions themselves, and maybe a disregard for the people who actually serve in them. This isn't just transition, Reagan. It feels like deliberate destabilization. It seems driven by an ideology that actively undermines the federal government's capacity.
These look like self-inflicted wounds that weaken the very fabric of our public services, making them less effective, not more. Now, moving to the geopolitical side, this America First policy, the ROK immigration crisis isn't just a challenge, as you put it. It seems like a catastrophic example of domestic political priorities just smashing head-on into long-term geopolitical objectives, detaining South Korean workers at that Hyundai LG factory, threatening a $350 billion investment. That sends a truly chilling message to all of our allies. It signals that our domestic political whims, essentially, will override strategic economic partnerships. It creates, again, profound unreliability. And that directly undermines our efforts to onshore critical supply chains, to counter rivals like China. Then you have the Chief Justice's decision, temporarily upholding the freeze of almost $5 billion in foreign aid, using disputed authority. That risks real damage to America's reputation abroad. It alienates global partners. And you even have Republicans themselves openly blaming the administration's trade war for a struggling economy and stifled job growth here at home. These actions aren't strengthening us. They seem to be isolating us and diminishing our global standing.
I have to disagree with the characterization that these actions are isolating us. The ROK situation, yes, it presents complexities. I grant you that. But it also sends a very clear signal. American laws will be enforced. That's a non-negotiable aspect of national sovereignty. This administration is balancing domestic security with economic goals. And these issues, while complex, they can be navigated, and they will be navigated, without fundamentally compromising our alliances with those who are truly aligned with us. Consider Singapore, for instance. They're acquiring P-8A Poseidon aircraft. They're reinforcing a long-standing bilateral defense relationship. Doesn't that clearly demonstrate the U.S. remains a reliable, a vital security partner to our true allies?
Well,
and look at the Millennium Challenge Corporation Compact with Côte d'Ivoire, a $300 million grant to bolster regional energy to counter Chinese influence. That demonstrates effective economic statecraft. It promotes transparent governance, it promotes U.S. interests, and it offers a robust alternative to our rivals' influence. These are strong, positive steps on the world stage. They show a reassertion of American leadership and values, not some isolationist retreat. We're defining a new, more effective form of engagement.
Okay, but Singapore's defense pledges were all important for their security. Reagan, that's a strategic decision for their own interests. It's not necessarily a wholesale endorsement of the entire America First approach, especially when other key allies are feeling, frankly, burned. And yes, the MCC compact is a positive tool for development, absolutely. But its impact is dwarfed by the negative ripple effect from the ROK crisis and this ongoing trade war. An 80% fall in international mail volume to the U.S., a projected $7 billion net loss for the USPS,
That severely impacts global commerce. That's not minor friction. That's tangible economic harm, a breakdown in international trust. And the administration's focus on deconfliction with China, that tense call between Secretary Hegseth and Admiral Dong Zhang, it seems less like managing rivalry and more like desperately trying to contain the fallout from an increasingly confrontational stance, a stance that seems to struggle to differentiate between allies and adversaries in this chaotic pursuit of domestic priorities.
This approach, I think, jeopardizes our long-term strategic position. It doesn't strengthen it.
The direct, candid dialogues with China, even when they are tense, are absolutely essential. Essential for preventing miscalculation, especially after China's provocative Victory Day military parade. This isn't chaos. This is responsible great power management. It's ensuring we don't stumble into conflict. The friction you perceive, that's merely the necessary, perhaps uncomfortable growing pains of a fundamental realignment, an alignment that puts American interests squarely back in focus, demanding fair play from all partners and rivals alike. And the administration's proactive stance, calling for large position reports in Treasury markets even without immediate signs of manipulation, that demonstrates a sophisticated, forward-looking approach to national security, to economic stability. This is about being strong. It's about being self-reliant.
And that ultimately benefits global stability by having a strong America leading the charge, not being dragged down by what many see as the old, failed globalist order. So it's clear, I think, that the administration is proactively addressing a complex landscape, both domestic and international, with decisive policies. Policies that are sometimes challenging, yes, but necessary. The ultimate goal remains a stronger, more secure America, and the actions reported today, from healthcare transparency and streamlined governance to robust defense partnerships, are integral to that vision. These necessary shifts are creating a more accountable government and a more resilient nation ready to face future challenges from a position of renewed strength and clarity.
And I would conclude that while perhaps some of the administration's stated intentions might seem valid on the surface, the methods being employed are creating significant internal and external policy contradictions, contradictions that are, I believe, undeniably counterproductive. The friction we see with key allies, coupled with the strain on vital domestic institutions, it strongly indicates that the America First approach, at least as it's currently being implemented, risks undermining the very interests it claims to protect. This leads, I fear, to greater instability and unpredictability in the long run. And so the critical need is to carefully consider the unforeseen consequences, the long-term cost of these disruptive policies, lest we find ourselves weaker, not stronger, in the end.
It's certainly clear that there are fundamentally different interpretations of the current administration's approach and its ultimate impact. This ongoing discussion, with its diverse array of challenges and opportunities, it really demands continuous analysis and engagement from every thoughtful citizen as we navigate these complex shifts together.
Indeed. The complexities laid bare in today's federal news update really highlight how much more there is to explore regarding the real-world impact of these strategies on our nation's future and on its role in the world. The consequences of these decisions, well, they will undoubtedly shape the coming years for all of us.